Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode. My name is Cesar, and I'm your host. And today I'm excited to bring on Laura Labin. She's the Chief Talent Officer at Labin and Associates, helping companies reach their goals by helping them find talent. And in today's episode, we're going to be diving deeper into Laura's personal story in the industry and also diving into some of the biggest challenges right now when it comes to finding and hiring the best talent out there. So Laura, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Cesar, for having me. It's always a wonderful opportunity to collaborate and share, and thank you for the invitation.
Absolutely, I'm excited for it. And I guess to kick us off, tell us a bit more about what you do currently at Labin and Associates, right? Yeah. What falls under your responsibility?
Yeah, so I'm running the firm, and there's a few of us that that are all working full desk, and that involves both going out and hunting for other clients, other companies that need help. Although we haven't had to do any hunting because they all come to us at this point. But we're really providing creative solutions to what their needs are. I mean, traditionally, we're doing a lot of contingent and retained search, but sometimes their needs might not necessarily fall into those. So if it's a matter of helping them scale and they need recruiters to do that, we'll place teams of recruiters or sourcers, or if they need a consultant to bridge them, like an interim, while they're doing the search, we can help with that. And solving problems for these clients, not just on a local, regional, but also a global level, because companies are globalized today. You know, they're virtual and remote and expanded with multiple offices or locations. So I partner up with other headhunters and recruiters that belong to a global cooperative, NPA Worldwide. And this provides the real scope of a wide range of different recruiting services that I can put together to provide as a solution for companies.
I love it. And since we're talking about what you offer, I know you work with multiple companies, right? Like from all sizes. What are some of the most common patterns or themes that you have picked up, you know, throughout the years working with these companies as it relates to potential pitfalls in their approach to finding the best talent out there?
Oh, yeah. Because over, you know, my career, I've worked in a wide range of different clients, you know, from large enterprises to small family companies as well. And today, most of what we're doing is with startups. So they're all new positions, new headcount, and oftentimes helping the company really develop their own culture and why they're attractive to other employees. Like, that's a big part of our conversation with them too. I think there's a huge theme of how companies like to grow, whether they like to bring in a bunch of their own familiarity or bring in a bunch of diversity and new people that they haven't met before. And I think one of the biggest problems, what I've seen for these companies that want to hire their friends, that they lose the ability to really create culture because they are all thinking the same and looking the same and sounding the same. and there's much more turnover in those types of environments as well, versus companies that are really looking for thought leaders and talent that has a wider range of perspectives. Those are the most successful. It's kind of like the difference between a company having a diversity program, which means checking off a box, versus a company that has real inclusion and belonging. And we had this conversation in one of my team meetings the other day. One of my team members in India is like, why all of this interest in diversity and trying to understand? So he could put on his lens. And I was like, because it makes companies more successful when they have more variety of thought that's going into building it, right? You have a different lens. You have a different perspective from another person. If everybody from the same college got together and worked, we would end up with that one little microcosm of the universe, but you get people from all over the world coming together, and you can brainstorm and be creative and find new ways to really help your end customer, whether it's software or building cars or whatever it is, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And how do you define culture, right? Since we're talking about company culture, what's your own personal definition of culture?
That is a great question, because I think that is a one of those things that can be mean different things to other mm-hmm. people, right? Mm-hmm. When I look at culture and how it's defined when we're selling an opportunity to a candidate and trying to describe it, it's the feeling that you get when you're with your coworkers. Like, mm-hmm. is this a family type of culture, or is this a real work hard, play hard? Are we supportive? Are we collaborative? It's how, you know, employees are treated by leadership, and it's about what type of people will fit in together, you know? Mm-hmm. And I've heard from candidates, like, I hate seeing job postings that say collaborative team environment. I don't want to talk to other engineers. And that's very helpful insight for me, because then I know that this is somebody who's maybe an introvert and antisocial, and he'd be better in a box where he's just doing his code. And like same startups, they have to be collaborative in nature because they're building things together. Culture is the feeling that you get inside of their environment. You know, is it a playful culture? Is it a very serious culture? Mm-hmm. You know, like management consulting companies are going to be real, buttoned up and presented like that. So that's a very specific culture. Everyone is exceptionally articulate, mm-hmm. and it doesn't necessarily mean you're all friends, but you all look like your friends when you go out in public.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. And since we're talking about diversity, and I want to dive deeper into your background, but you know, I want to dive into diversity because I consider that to be part of culture. Mm-hmm. What do most organizations get wrong about diversity?
Well, the first thing that companies get wrong is trying to check off a box. It's usually identified by racial construct, right? Mm-hmm. This person Asian or Islander or blah. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where they make the first mistake. Like Facebook has initiative to have like 50% all people of color working for them. And I don't understand that approach, because I've talked to candidates who are like, you can tell that they hired me just to meet their diversity quota because mm-hmm. I am the only person of any color in here, and nobody, I don't get along with anyone. And so that's the first mistake. The second mistake is that they're lacking employee resource groups or the opportunity to gather together as coworkers where you can really support each other. Mm-hmm. You know, and we're always learning and we're always growing, but you know, we're in a real interesting time in our civilization's history where there's never been more divisiveness, right?
Yeah.
So overcoming stereotypes and becoming more sensitive to each other's language, like those are the ways that we're really going to be more inclusive in our environment. Like, for example, I put she, her on my LinkedIn profile, and I've been asked, well, we all know that you're female. And I feel that's not about my identity. It's about mm-hmm. me creating a safe space for other people to also be comfortable with however they choose to identify their gender. Right.
Yeah.
And so that there's a lot of large companies, large publicly traded companies who are doing this really poorly. Because we're always learning, we're always growing, you know, there's definitely a lot of transformation. And I think it's helpful and supportive for employee resource groups. You know, you can chat about some of the shit I heard today, right? I mean, things crazy white people say, and it helps to create a levity, but also, you know, how did you respond to that when that person said that horribly racist thing? And then we can mm-hmm. all be growing together, right? And that's real, you know, inclusion, that's real mm-hmm. belonging, not just letting you take off a day to go see a movie together. Just
yeah, that doesn't even scratch the surface.
No, it's how can we all make each other better humans?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Now, from the recruiting, talent acquisition process, what would be one of the things you would change to attract a more diverse pool of candidates?
This question has come up a lot in tech recruiting as well. Not everybody tests well, and engineers are often given tasks and tests. Mm-hmm. What's more supportive is an environment where you get to work together, maybe in exercise, maybe and that's one thing that's been brought up specifically in inclusion conversations, right? Because they're if you're asking people to all interview this one way, you're missing out on other people that would be much more successful in a different way, mm-hmm. you know, and I see companies messing the interview process up all the time. Some of the best companies have an internal person that works with all the managers to help them interview, helps them write their interview questions. Yeah. That's something that makes things more inclusive, right? Mm-hmm. And I know that there's a hesitation from a lot of my friends of color. They don't want to put pictures on LinkedIn as well. Mm-hmm. And I can understand that, especially mm-hmm. considering the tokenization of checking off a box.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want to be recruited just because your skin is darker, right?
That is true. That's true though.
Yeah. Right. Right. So I support that too. And I think that that's safe. You know, in this country, it's illegal to put all the personal information on your resume, so we can mm-hmm. discourage any type of discrimination, but it does help us to connect with each other once we see each other's faces. Like, I think it's a really good opportunity to show people that you're a person when you put yourself out there, but that's not always very inclusive, right? If hiring authorities are making decisions based on what somebody's profile looks like.
Yes. I mean,
on race though. That's about content, really.
Yeah, I had not considered the LinkedIn profile, to be honest. Yeah, mm-hmm. that's right. Because I'm assuming most hiring managers use LinkedIn as a tool to get more data around a candidate, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that makes sense.
And think about how privilege plays into that as well, and how people present their profiles, where, right. you know, we all going to school and having degrees and being like shared. What if you don't have any other friends that have been to college, and nobody else has shown you how to do this, and you have to learn things harder that way, right? So mm-hmm. there's a lot of self-marketing. Also, in culturally, not everybody wants to toot their own horn. Right. Yeah. So that's oftentimes the other challenge. I found some of the best gems of human talent when digging deeper. You know, I'm like, there's something beyond the resume. This is a person, and they don't even know how to sell themselves. So I can help them. Mm-hmm. Right. Gems, absolute wonderful talent that was under a rock somewhere.
I love that. I'm gonna put a placeholder on that, because I definitely want to come back into that, but I want us to go back in memory lane, you know, into mm-hmm. that fork on the road where one way is what you're doing now, right? Mm-hmm. And the other way is whatever other career alternative, right?
Mm-hmm.
What was that moment that for you, like, in terms of deciding, hey, this is what I want to do?
Well, there's two significant things, and they're related. So when I first started working as a recruiting professional, I was living in Los Angeles, and I was also working as a musician, and I would be gigging out with different bands, corporate bands, and, you know, at a regular gig by the airport at the bar every Tuesday night. And it was a big part of me and who I identify as a musician. Well, one of the groups that I was working with had his opportunity to work in Thailand for like 3 months. I was not going to turn this down, because I had been chanting and meditating for this, and it happened. So I told my boss, if you want to terminate my employment, that's okay. But if you'd like to keep me on, just send a leave of absence and leave internet access. I can make sure we don't drop the ball in any of these jobs that we've been working on and candidates. And he said, sure. So I was living on Koh Samui. I'd finished the evening performance. I go right next door to the internet cafe and submitting resumes and like scheduling interviews. And it just sparked my fire so much. You know, I was at this opportunity. I wanted, I could have stayed in Asia and sang at nightclubs at hotel bars all over. And mm-hmm. no, I wanted to go back to Los Angeles and put people to work. So, you know, fast forward to about 8 years ago, I was a partner in another staffing firm, and I just wasn't feeling it. It wasn't vibing. The culture was not a fit for me at all. Mm-hmm. And I kept having this nightmare that I would be stranded somewhere in the world with no suitcase and no money, going, oh no, how am I going to survive? And it was always the same, like, oh, very exasperating. I guess I could sing. You know, like, I know I can do that if I need to. Mm-hmm. And as soon as I made the decision to dissolve my partnership in the other firm and open my own company, the nightmare stopped. So it was really just a test, I guess, for my my spirit to be really clear with what I wanted to be doing. And and of course, you know, everything that I've done, it's really it's proven to me time and time again that I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. Like, this is my divine purpose, you know, to be helping people. And, you know, think about the fact that I'm walking people through some of the biggest decisions of their life, you know, to quit their job, to go start another job. Like, this is a very big stressor for people. And you know, my previous background is like music therapy. I never really realized that I'd be using those therapy skills in my everyday business. My husband's also a recruiter. He has a psychology degree. It's very helpful to understand people. You know, it's the one thing that we love about our business. And the other, like, it's also the thing that drives us nuts, because you can't control people. Things happen in life. And you know, I think that the most successful people in this business are really good at not taking things personal, right? If a candidate ghosts us, or if a client gives us really stupid feedback, we just have to let it roll off our backs, because it's not ours, right? It's not ours to take on. And when I see recruiters struggling, it's usually because of external factors that are out of our control.
I love that the overall theme is you went with your intuition, right? You felt something and you followed through. And I think that's one of the best things we can do, right?
I think it's the only thing we can do, because if we fight it, the universe, the creator, is just going to keep pushing us till we hear it.
You'll keep pushing it until you get it.
It's true.
Absolutely. I know when we did the pre-interview, you mentioned that one of the hardest things for you, one of the hardest years, was when you were in a wheelchair, right?
Yes. It taught me a lot.
Yeah. I want to dive into the lessons of that year, right? What was the hardest part, and what is the biggest lesson that you learned from that year?
So I was in an auto accident at the end of 95 and broke a bunch of vertebrae in my spine and completely dislocated my right leg. So they had to, you know, all the king's horses and all the king's men put Humpty Dumpty back together again. And it was pretty fascinating. The original surgeon in Kansas said, we're going to have to consider the possibility of amputation. And I, you know, I'm so glad I had advocates in my family to get me to get me out of there.
Yes, absolutely.
And so this, you know, ski team surgeon was like, oh, this is like a football injury. So I because my back was also broken, I couldn't use my crutches. I was in a wheelchair. And my leg, because it was being rebuilt, it was oftentimes sticking out. And every time I would go through a door, or like people would be so awkward. They didn't want to look me in the face. They would say really stupid things. And it was really eye-opening to see how external presence can be so distracting for people. You know, there's so many other metaphors out there, but what I learned is that, you know, everyone's a person, everyone's on the inside there, every single human, everybody, and never make assumptions about what somebody else is going through. You know, like, never make assumptions. We are all going through hard stuff every day, all the time, all of us, right? And having that compassion and empathy, really helpful. I learned a lot about myself and my ability to heal and, you know, regenerate and overcome. I mean, I was going to go start. I used to be a runner. I was on my way to a ski trip under the park. It happened. And I had to, instead of going to practice for a marathon, which was my goal before the accident, I had to relearn how to walk. I had to completely learn how to walk again. So, I'm very sensitive to those that get judged without anybody knowing who they are. I think that's part of the reason why I like to go hunting for those gems of candidates. And you know, I understand corporate recruiters are going through boxes, or call them boxes, the files of resumes, and just you know, yes, no, yes, no, yes, no. But they miss out on a lot of opportunity. And I think there's a lot of key indicators when you look at something that I've been able to make better assumptions. So my instincts have gotten better, right? I haven't been wrong yet.
I love it. And I love that that was one of the biggest lessons, right? Don't make assumptions about people. Don't judge, because we don't, you don't know, right, what someone might be going through. Yeah. And it's a perfect segue to pick up that conversation on, I think you have on your website, seeing a candidate's true essence, right? And, mm-hmm. and going beyond their resume, right?
So yeah.
What are some, well, one, why is that important, right? And two, what are some of the practical ways in how you help companies
mm-hmm.
See beyond the resume?
Yeah. Well, a lot of that is how I'm presenting the candidates as well, right? Mm-hmm. Walking them through it, as I call it, setting the stage. I want to set mm-hmm. them up for success, mm-hmm. you know, and identifying what the candidate's questions are about the company, knowing what the company's questions are about the candidate, I can set their expectations together to have a you know, rewarding experience, whether or not they end up working together. Yeah. And also sitting in on those conversations with their leadership, whether it be the actual hiring teams or their human resources teams, you know, what they should be doing to be attractive to candidates, right? Mm-hmm. You know, oftentimes it's small administrative things like transferring a visa. No, that's such a simple thing to do. And if companies have never done that before, they might need some guidance and that makes sense. Or maybe they're getting to the point where there's almost 50 employees and they need a human resources person now because they need to be FMLA compliant. You know, there's a lot of other little administrative things that companies might not necessarily know about hiring, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of, if they've never hired before, and there's a lot of entrepreneurs that have never hired before, right? You know, yes. They might not understand all of the responsibility that it really, when you are someone else's employer, what mm-hmm. that means. And that's, I think, some of the key aspect. I used to be an executive assistant before I got into all of the rest of tech and sales and recruiting. And oftentimes just concierging, asking the questions that they don't know they need to ask, you know, to provide them the insight and then referring them the best people to solve those problems, right? Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's a payroll solution thing. Sometimes it's a benefits broker. Both of those things can come together. And other perks, you know, gym benefits or free lunches, those types of things. I'm not going to go make them lunches, but I can refer them to a bunch of different yes. Organizations that specialize in that, or even collaboration. You know, if there's some companies that are looking for an office space and they might be, I know that they could kind of share space together and it would be economical for them and not a conflict because they're in different businesses. Mm-hmm. You know, there's so many great opportunities to connect. Really a connector, if you're going to define me as I'm a connector, but I also am into collaboration, right? Yeah. The more generous I am with my time, it all comes back to me.
It does. I have found that the most successful people, they're so generous with their time in some way. And it's just interesting how that works.
Well, I think it's, we all realize that we're all interconnected. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And also, time is super precious. If I've got a moment with you, I'm going to be all in on it. My father heard me working one day and I was working out of his living room kitchen. And he was like, "You're really like involved in a conversation." I said, "Yes, all day, each person, because this is my one opportunity to really connect with this other person." Yes. So I'm going to give them all of my attention.
That's the best thing you can do. And I think mm-hmm. that's one of the things that helps you stand apart from the rest. Because it's not easy to do in the age of distraction, right? Like just bombarded with things and messages and expectations.
True. It's true. It's a choice mm-hmm. on how I spend mm-hmm. my attention. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Of course, at the end of the day, I don't have any attention left for anyone.
Yes. Now, Laura, working with, you know, many organizations, including startups, now it's a partnership, right? Mm-hmm. What are some of the requirements to make this partnership successful, right? Between your firm and the organization, right? Because maybe they have a very messy hiring process. Mm-hmm. Right? And it's just, even if you do your best work, it might not work out, right? So how do you
I actually have a really good analogy for that. So this last year, working with a new company, and I've known the client, the hiring person, the manager for years, but this is a new company and they're global and they don't really have any compliance in their HR. And I learned this after making a placement and having someone start, and they not only didn't pay him on time, but then they were misleading about why they weren't paying him on time because they needed to get set up to do payroll in Delaware. Mm-hmm. And instead of just telling the employee, our bad, it's going to be a little bit late, here's an Amazon card for your inconvenience. No, they kept lying, saying it's coming, it's coming, it's coming. Mm. And I learned of some other unsavory practices, like in Latin America, they just wanted to bring people on as freelancers and instead of employees. And that's not cool. I mean, how am I going to recruit someone out of a perfectly good position where they're protected as, you know, with all of their rights and their insurance and such, and to be taking that freelance job where they could have, you know, could let go at any second and no gratis pay or any of the other things that are standard in Latin America. I said, I can't work with you guys anymore because one of the managers said to me, well, it's not my fault. It's the execs above me. And I said, herein lies the crux of the problem. And if they're not interested in changing, you know, it is their company. Yeah. Right. And so I can't force them if they're not interested. If anything changes in the future, you can come find me and I'd be happy to work with you. But there's a blockage. And when it comes down to how you're treating your employees and how you're handling the legality of their employment, this is really important. This is a deal breaker for me. So, I can't recruit someone out of a perfectly good job knowing that they're going to head into a unknown situation.
Right. And that's where the ethical recruiting comes into place, right? If you know that they're not value aligned, you will be doing a disservice to you and to the candidate as well.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Well, let alone their own brand, you know, in terms of their ability to overcome the high rates of turnover. You know, people talk about there's the greenhouse or green, what's it called? Glassdoor will let you know what your employees think of you. Right.
Yeah.
Some of the best companies spend a lot of time, you know, really working on getting higher Glassdoor ratings. And some of the worst companies try to spend a lot of time, but like to be so short-sighted to not realize that every time someone quits your company, that they're out there saying probably unfavorable things about your company. It's poisoning the market of talent for you.
It is, right? Because now more than ever, candidates have options to be vocal, right? Glassdoor is just one outlet, but there's multiple there. There's even one that where you can be anonymous. I'm forgetting the name of it. But it's basically a social platform that's anonymous and you can just say whatever.
I think it's helpful. I mean, let's be real. I might not necessarily always want feedback, right? If I know that it's not doing my 100%, but it is helpful to get feedback. And it's short-sighted to not ask for it. Mm-hmm. You know, companies that don't do exit interviews, that just shows that they don't really care.
You know, there was multiple companies I worked with in the past that they did have that process in place, but I found out later on that they never implemented any of the feedback that they received through the exit interviews. So it goes back to culture, right? Like you can have the process in place, but if the culture is, if it's some part of the culture, it's not going to get anywhere, right?
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. That's a big challenge.
Mm-hmm. It is. Well, I know a big Fortune, you know, 500 company that recently let their CEO go because they spent more than $25 million on discrimination lawsuits and settlements. So
crazy.
When somebody on the board, they said, you've got to go, you know, $25 million, not doing something right. Yeah. just throwing it away over discrimination, over treating people poorly, you know?
Yeah.
It's stupid.
It's very stupid. Yeah.
But you look at other things in the news today, like, you know, Tesla, and I can't remember the other company, the big, big, big settlements that are in favor of employees. So not only humans have woken up from this pandemic with greater consciousness and awareness of like, I'm not the same person I was 2 years ago, and I want to do things that make me happy, but courts and juries are now also putting employers on notice.
So,
most important thing, you know, and when I ask a company, why would somebody come work for you versus a competitor? If they don't have an answer, not a red flag. That's a red flag, man.
Red flag indeed. it's a candidate.
I don't know
market.
How I can do my job if you can't be a good employer.
You can't, right? Because as we mentioned, even if you do a successful placement, the candidate might leave in 3 months, right? If it's not a great culture. So it's important, right?
Yep.
So and with that, what can recruiters do to stay on top of their game, right? Especially as this new wave of technology with automation, with you know, other platforms out there, like how can recruiters stay on top of their game?
Well, I mean, I think that the most successful recruiters are super organized. So, and it's just about finding your own system of whatever it takes for you to be super organized and goal oriented, you know, like the goal of making X amount of submittals a day, X amount of interviews a week, whatever that is. But having a goal, without a goal or a focus, you're going to miss everything. The whole train has left the station. When I was early in my career trying to figure out how I was going to organize my day, my mentor said, just whatever's closest to the money, honey, just go through that. But I think that in addition to all of the advancements in technology and such, it's really important to stay relevant and learn things. I mean, every time we work on a new position, we have to learn something new anyway. So that's fun. Mm-hmm. But the most important thing is taking care of yourself, you know?
Yeah.
Exercise. We spend so much time sitting on our butts, you know, get out there, shake it, eat well, you know, get lots of rest. And I mean, self-care is really important for recruiters. And without that, you can't really be helpful to others, right? And I think with especially this year, which has been unprecedented in terms of the amount of volume that we're all working on, and recruiters are coming out of retirement because there's not enough of them, right? I think it's really important that we do that mental, physical health, self-care thing, whatever that means to people. But that's really important, because if we're not taking care of ourselves, think about how we're messaging that to our clients and our candidates, you know, a lot of anger and frustration, and that's no bueno. You're ruining your brand. You're ruining, why don't you just take your business and throw it in the toilet, right? If you're going to be an ass, that's what I think that's one of the most important things, and be open to collaborating. You know, we live in an infinitely abundant universe. There's no shortage of jobs and clients out there, right? Be open to trusting other recruiters, you know, to partner up with them and speed up the rate of creation. You know, it's just, it's changed my business. So they, you know, doing this for as long as I've opened my firm has been so rewarding, not only in the act that I get to partner up with other superb recruiters, but the financial reward of being able to, you know, triple, quadruple my production is totally, totally exciting. We can help more people when we work together.
Yeah, I'm all about collaboration, right? Because there's only so much you can do on your own.
Yeah, well, and I think it's the only thing that's going to save us as a species on this planet, because competition has been ruining our planet, right?
yeah, absolutely. So what does that collaboration look like, right? Like if someone wants to partner up, like do they just reach out, be like, hey, we should partner up to tackle this?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I have multiple partners that I regularly meet with, and we're constantly going, what's hot? What's hot today? Because things are moving really, really fast. I think that the secret to really collaborating is finding your tribe, finding the people that you like to work with, you know, that you haven't understood. You don't have to be reinventing the wheel with them. Right. You know, like oftentimes when I'm working with a new partner and they send me a bunch of horrible resumes, but they don't ever send me any better ones. Like they're not, this discourages me, right? It discourages them. It's just like, there's no success. It's just heat seeking activity.
Yeah.
But it's really great, to to work with other folks that understand that, you know, it's really important to be as transparent as possible, you know, mm-hmm. and when I'm sharing my client requirements with my partners, I want them to have all of the information they need to be successful, right? So that it speeds this up. So transparency is really important in collaboration, and trust. I mean, we're in the business of trust, right?
It's a people business. Yeah, absolutely. One of the, I guess the biggest challenge this year is the talent shortage, right? Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on that? And, you know, what are some practical ways on how you approach that, mm-hmm. that big challenge, right? Finding that very, sometimes very niche talent that companies need.
Oh, and that's all we're working on is very specific positions, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. You know, I think that our differentiator at Levine & Associates is kindness. Mm-hmm. You know, all of the noise that's going on out there, when we're reaching out, it's very personal one-to-one messaging, right? And also the touch, you know, keeping in touch with them. We use some AI tools that say, okay, it's time to touch them now. It's time to message mm-hmm. them. They're opening their inbox now. We should call them. Like, and that's a really great way for us to use technology to free us up for higher problem solving. I think that it's really the only differentiator is how we're presenting and communicating and messaging to talent, and then understanding the requirements. You know, I think that's the other differentiator, is that I'll get really deep into the weeds. And even though I'm not an engineer, engineering candidates will often compliment me on my grasp of knowledge. All we need to do is just be able to explain what it is that the company is doing, right? Mm-hmm. And also understanding how to ask, you know, that credibility factor is also really, really important. Right now in that noisy market, there's a lot of people that don't know what they're doing. And that's really frustrating for candidates, yes. right? It's yes. really frustrating for them. So I think that's one of the best things that we can offer, is that kindness to them. Yeah. And also, because we're collaborating with other folks, every time I get a candidate into an opportunity to connect, and I find out who they are, what they want, what they're attracted to, then I can scan through all the rest of my opportunities throughout my network and mm-hmm. identify additional opportunities for them. And that's, you know, providing a lot of service to a candidate for free, right? Mm-hmm. And I mean, ultimately, I can get a candidate into their dream job, I've done my part, right?
Yes, that's the goal, right? That's the holy grail, right? If you can do that, then...
Oh, it feels so good. Yeah. It feels so good to build cultures and teams too, mm-hmm. you know, and it speeds up for more of the client. So like, I placed an executive and been helping her build her whole team. And I know who she is because we spent so much time together getting her the job, that mm-hmm. now whenever I'm tooling with the talent, I know who's going to fit in. So I can give them one candidate to interview and they'll hire them. And that's awesome. Like, that's the sweet spot, right? Yeah. And it's so fun. And everybody on the team like messages me regularly, like, thank you so much for that's the shit I get up for, man.
That's the best. That's the best. When you get those messages of gratitude.
Yes.
Flooding your inbox.
Yes.
You know, yes. You're onto something.
Oh, yeah. It feels mm-hmm. so good. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and perspective is everything. You know, how we choose to spend our attention, right? Mm-hmm. And if we focus on the good, we get more good.
I agree with you. One more question before we wrap it up here. When it comes to the talent shortage, right? Why do you think there's such a big gap between what companies need and versus what candidates are providing?
Well, I think in this last year of the pandemic, the evolution, as I say, companies are going to be going through this growth pain as well. I mean, mm-hmm. with the huge amount of volume going on in the market, and most of these are new headcount jobs, mm-hmm. what happens when they quit all their other jobs, right? Businesses will need to replace them.
Yeah.
So they're going to become more efficient, or they're going to have to change some things. And companies they evolve, they change, right? Mm-hmm. So the big companies that are experiencing a huge exodus, you know, it's not like they can just replace them with another body, because those bodies aren't out there. Mm-hmm. You know, we're going to have to change some of the ways we do things in our country, give more, sponsor more visas for engineers to come to the mm-hmm. nurses, such a shortage of nurses everywhere, I would assume. But that's going to be I don't see this problem being solved in the next 18 months. I think it's just going to evolve into be a different problem. Right. Mm-hmm. But the truth be told, employers have been put on notice. So if they're not good to their people, it's going to be ugly, ugly. And there's a lot of jobs out there that are just going to be, you know, replaced by robots, right? Mm-hmm. Warehouse and some restaurants and grocery stores and things. But there's so many highly skilled jobs that people need training for. So companies should invest in their training, right? I just spoke to someone who was like, this employer will sponsor if somebody wants to go get all their training, their certifications, they'll pay for it. And I'm perfect. Like, that's smart. That yeah. invest in your employees. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. And think about how many more jobs are going to be out there for mechanical folks doing the support work, the robotics, when call them the technicians, right? Yeah. Like mm-hmm. that industry has been blowing up for a long time anyway. You know, I heard a story about they're going to recruit baristas out of Starbucks because they know how to work with equipment. Right.
That's true.
Just retrain them to work with robots, right? Yeah. And do the, yeah. So there's so many jobs that people haven't been trained for yet that they're going to be part of this new world that we're living in. Think about all the electric power stations that are being put up all across the country. Mm-hmm. So many jobs. Yeah. So the talent shortage is real and it's not going to get better.
No. And it makes me mad when I hear other companies say, oh, we don't have time or budget to train. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, in my head, I'm like, well, you're going to go out of business if you don't invest in your people, right? Mm-hmm. It's just, mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. Again, yeah. goes back to culture, right?
Yeah.
Always about the culture.
Yes, yes. Oh, and those companies that have been entitled, like, no, they should be fighting to come work for us. They're going to be really taken to their knees is what I'm watching. Yeah. It's really hard for some of those big companies to be attractive to the right people.
Yeah. Awesome, Laura. Well, I feel like we could go on for hours, but I wanted to wrap it up by asking you, whether it's book, courses, or however you keep the axe sharpened, I guess that's the saying. Where do you get your upskilling, you know, or your training.
I just totally, I had this feeling you're going to ask me what kind of books I've been reading lately, but I'm after reading resumes all day long. I haven't read an actual book for a while, but there's a lot of great, you know, what got you here isn't going to get you there. You know, that's probably my Bible. You have to always be, but I'm on one of my monitors here at my central command station. I've always got some sort of documentary that I'm watching. I'm always learning. I want to be mastering new languages. So, you know, there's a lot of what I do that is very intense on my attention with people, but when I'm doing, you know, other things, catching through emails and such, I can learn so much. Yeah. And, you know, if we don't keep ourselves that active part on top of our pituitary, the area that new information is coming into, mm-hmm. it's also what keeps us from aging. You know, we lose our balance when we start aging. It's because we're not learning all of the time. And I think, you know, we go around the sun every 365 and a quarter days. So if you're doing the same thing today you were doing a year ago, you're going backwards in time. So
you gotta constantly stay on top of.
Yes. You know, so I'm always a new technology. You know, I learned so much this year about cryptocurrency and blockchain because I'm recruiting in that space. Right. Yeah. And it's really awesome. And so I'm always learning new things about technology.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love it. Anything that stands out in particular besides the book, you know?
Yeah. So one of the things that I've been studying is the Lakota language. And one of my favorite words that I learned is ochichile, which means look.
Mm,
ochichile, look. And I hear that every day. But what else am I learning? Yeah, that's a lot of it. Yeah, I wish I had a station, NPR's podcast all day long.
NPR, it's one of my favorite outlets as well.
I love fresh air and I'm always listening to.
Awesome. Well, where can people find you? What's the best way to connect with you?
Laura at Levine and Associates. You can find our website, levineandassociates.com. And you'll oftentimes find me on LinkedIn because I'm living inside of there as well. So come connect with me on LinkedIn, Laura Levine.
Laura, thank you so much for being on the show and sharing with us more about your background and what we can do to, you know, level up our game when it comes to hiring and recruiting. Thanks so much.
Thank you for inviting me. It's always a joy and a pleasure. I look forward to future conversations, Caesar.
Absolutely.